Exit the guest house, turning to the left, and through the first large white gate. Cross the plaza and go around the left side of the large red brick tower. And at the back, I'll find a second larger white gate. Let's pause there. In the 16th and 17th century, Gdansk was Poland's wealthiest city, with gorgeous architecture, much of it in the Flemish Mannerist style. It rivaled the two historic capitals of Krakow and Warsaw. During this golden age, Polish kings would visit this city of the well-to-do Hanseatic League merchants and gawk around the same route that I will be walking today. The following walk introduces me to the best of historic Gdansk. The walk itself should take about 40 minutes, but adding the stops along the way, plan on 3 to 4 hours and a pivo stop. Medieval Gdansk had an elaborate network of protection for the city, including several moats and gates, among them the white Upland Gate, the red brick torture house, and the taller attached red brick prison tower. The three gates were all connected, and visitors had to pass through all of them to enter the city. The Upland Gate is a 16th century gate, the main entrance into Old Town, and it was the original starting point for the Royal Way. It was here that the Polish king was welcomed and given the keys to the city. The gate was originally surrounded by a 50-meter moat and was named for its upland location above the water level. The metal pulleys used for raising and lowering the drawbridges are still visible underneath the coat of arms for Poland, Prussia, and Gdansk. The gate has undergone major renovation work in recent years and now houses a tourist information point. Now walk around the left side of the torture house and prison tower and look to my left to see a long brick building with four gables. It's next to the modern theater building. This is the 16th century armory, one of the best examples of Dutch Renaissance architecture in Europe. Though this part of the building looks like four separate house facades, it's a kind of urban camouflage to hide its real purpose from potential attackers. But there's at least one clue for what it's really for. Notice the exploding cannonballs at the top of the turrets. The round, pointy-top tower next door is the straw tower. Gunpowder was stored here, and the roof was straw, so if it exploded, it would blow its top without destroying the walls. Walking back to the prison tower and torture chamber, these were originally built as part of the city's fortifications in the second half of the 14th century. The complex was rebuilt by Anton Obergen between 1593 and 1604, with the smaller of the two buildings becoming a torture chamber and courthouse, while the larger tower became the prison. These walls are upwards of 15 feet thick. It was here that executions were carried out until the middle of the 19th century. Damaged during World War II, it has been extensively renovated and now houses the torture museum that I can visit. The museum is about 20 zlotys, and if I want to go up the tower for a great view of the city, it will be an additional 5. Returning to the Golden Gate, the other gates were defensive, but this one's purely ornamental. The four women up top represents virtues that the people of Gdansk should exhibit toward others: peace, freedom, prosperity, and fame. The inscription, a psalm in medieval German, compares Gdansk to Jerusalem, famous and important. In the middle is one of the coats of arms of Gdansk, two white crosses under a crown on a red shield. The coat of arms will be seen all over town. The Golden Gate was built between 1642 and 1644. It was also destroyed during World War II and not restored until 1997. A An inscription on the gate reads, "Small states grow by concord, great ones fall by disagreement." Walking through the gate, I'm back on Yulika Dwuga. Here I can look back on the other side of the gate and see the allegorical statues that depict wisdom, piety, justice, and concord. It said, if an arrow's broken, let's take it out of the quiver and fix it. I'm standing on what's easier to pronounce, Long Street. Gdansk was cosmopolitan and exceptionally tolerant in the Middle Ages, attracting a wide range of people, including many who were persecuted elsewhere, Jews, Scots, Dutch, Flemish, Italian, Germans, and more. Members of each group brought with them strands of their culture, which they wove into the tapestry of the city, demonstrated by the eclectic houses along this street. This lovely street wasn't always so lively and carefree. At the end of World War II, Long Street was in ruins. The city was badly damaged when the Nazis first invaded, but the worst devastation came when the Soviets arrived. This was the first traditionally German city that Red Army reached on their march toward Berlin, and the soldiers were set loose to level the place in retaliation for all of the pain the Nazis had caused. Soviets didn't destroy nearby Gdynia, which they considered Polish, not German. But here, Soviet officers turned a blind eye as their soldiers raped and brutalized residents. An entire order of horrified nuns committed suicide by throwing themselves into the river. Upwards of 80% of the area was destroyed, and it was only thanks to detailed drawings and photographs that these buildings could be so carefully reconstructed, mostly using the same original brick. During Gdansk's golden age, these houses were taxed based on frontage, so they were built skinny and deep. The whitest houses belonged to the super elite. Different as they are from the outside, every house had the same general plan inside. Each had three parts, starting with the front and moving back. First was a fancy drawing room to show off for visitors. Then came a narrow corridor to the back rooms, often along the side of an inner courtyard. Because the houses had only a few windows facing the outer street, this courtyard provided much-needed sunlight to the rest of the house. The residential quarters were in the back, where the family actually lived. The bedroom, kitchen, office. Picturesque Long Street is one of the city's oldest thoroughfares. From the Golden Gate, which protects it, the gently curving street opens into an array of colorful burger houses, rococo portals, Gothic moldings, and original porticos. The house numbers run in opposite directions on either side, a typical feature of old Gdansk streets. Number 12 houses a museum of burger interiors. This is the Upagen House on the right. Let's go in and see what a real burger house looked like in the golden age of Gdansk. This house is my chance to get a glimpse of what's behind the colorful facades lining Yulika Dwuga. As I walk in, I can check out the cutaway models just inside the entry to see the three parts that I'll be visiting. Dolled up visitor rooms in front, a corridor along the courtyard, and private rooms in the back. As I enter, costumed staffers will likely usher me to the top floor, which houses temporary exhibits. Back down on the middle floor, I can see the finely decorated salon, which was used to show off for guests. Most of this furniture is original, saved from World War II bombs by locals who hid it in the countryside. Passing into the dining room, note the knee-high paintings of hunting and celebrations. Along the passage to the back, each room has a theme. Butterflies in the smoking room, flowers, then birds in the music room. In private rooms at the back, notice how much simpler the decor is. Downstairs, I'll be able to pass through the kitchen, the pantry, and a room with photos from the house before the war. They used these in order to reconstruct what I'm seeing today. Across the street and a little farther down are some of the most striking facades along all of Long Street. The blue and white house with the three giant heads is from the 19th century, when the hot style was eclecticism, borrowing bits and pieces from various architectural eras. This was one of the few houses on the street that survived World War II. This is number 71, and it still bears original moldings from the second half of the 15th century. Number 28 is the Ferber House, dating to 1560, with magnificent sculptures of the three familiar coats of arms. Number 29 has an interesting crew of Roman emperors peering from his Baroque facade. King Władysław IV entertained local deities and dignitaries at Fligamic, the Lion's Castle, at number 35. Two lions guard his portal. The house neighboring it dates to 1563 and is a splendid example of the influence of the Dutch Renaissance on Gdansk architecture. At the right corner is a huge blocky red post office. It doesn't quite fit with the skinny facades lining the rest of the street. But step inside and doves are fluttering under an airy glass atrium. Across the street and a few doors down from the post office, there are colorful scenes just overhead on the facade of the cocktail bar. These are slices of life from 17th century Gdansk. Drinking, talking, buying, fighting, playing music. The ship is a koga, a typical symbol of Gdansk. A couple of doors down from the cocktail bar is Neptune Cinema. It's marked Kino. In the 1980s, this was the only movie theater in the city, and locals lined up all along the street to get in. Young adults remember coming here with their grandparents to see a full day of cartoons. Now, as with traditional Main Street cinemas, this one is threatened by the rising popularity of multiplexes outside of the city center. Across the street from the theater are three houses belonging to the very influential medieval Ferber family, which produced many burghers, mayors, and even a bishop. On the house with the little dog over the door is number 29. Look for the heads in the circles. These are the Caesars of Rome. At the top of the building is Mr. Ferber's answer to the constant question, why build such an elaborate house? Pro invidia. For the sake of envy. Dom Ferber's house dates from the 1560s. While at number 35, King Władysław IV entertained local dignitaries at the Lion's Castle. Two lions guard his portal. The house neighboring it dates 1563 and is a splendid example of the influence of Dutch Renaissance on Gdansk architecture. The Renaissance house at number 45 belonged to the Schumann family and is sometimes called the House of the Polish Kings. Figures of Greek gods stud its alcoves. I should be right around the Bar Mazinki Neptune, the most popular milk bar in Gdansk. Might be a good place to take a break and sit down and enjoy the view. The eastern end of the street is just in view and is dominated by the tall, slim tower of the town hall. The town hall spire with a golden replica of King Zgomot August on his pinnacle dominates the street and the skyline. Built in the late 14th century as the seat of city authorities, the town hall hosted many Polish kings. It was almost completely destroyed during World War II, but rebuilt with extraordinary care. The tower contains a 37-bell carillon, which was inaugurated on New Year's Eve 2000. The interior of the building, home to Gdansk History Museum today, is lushly decorated with painted ceilings, colorful frescoes, and elaborate furniture and carvings. Two solemn lions guard its 18th-century portal, from where an elaborate staircase leads to the luxuriant Sala Swarovska, the Red Room. Admission is 15 zloty and probably is well worth a visit. The Rasuts Wonego Maestra, or Town Hall, is a landmark building and contains remarkable decorations from Gdansk Golden Age. I can climb to the top of the tower for commanding views of the city for 5 zloty. There may be some changes because of recent renovations, but I can buy a ticket below around the gift shop and head upstairs and inside. In the entry room, examine the photo showing the building at the end of World War II. Their ornately carved wooden door, which I'll pass through in a minute, also deserves a close look. Above the door are 2 crosses under a crown, the seal of Gdansk. It's being held and is often depicted this way by a pair of lions. The felines are stubborn and independent, just like the citizens of Gdansk. Close the door partway to look at the carvings of crops. Around the frame of the door are mirrormen, reminding us that these crops, like so many other resources of Poland, are transported on the Vistula and out through Gdansk. Go through the door into the Red Hall. This is where the Gdansk City Council met in the summertime. The lavish fireplace with another pair of lions holding the coat of arms of Gdansk is just for show. City Council members would sit in the seats around the room, debating city policy. The shin-level paintings depict the earth. The exquisitely detailed inlaid wood just over the seats are animals. The paintings on the wall above represent the 7 virtues the burghers meeting in this room should have. And the ceiling is all about theology. Examine the ceiling. It has 25 paintings in total with both Christian and pagan themes and is meant to inspire the decision makers in this room to make good choices. The smaller ones around the edges are scenes from mythology and the Bible. The one in the middle from 1607 shows God's relationship to Gdansk. In the foreground, the citizens of Gdansk go about their daily lives. Above them, high atop the arch, God's hand reaches down from within clouds of Hebrew characters and grasps the city steeple. The rainbow arching above also symbolizes God's connection to Gdansk. Mirroring that is the Vistula River, which begins in the mountains of southern Poland on the right and runs through the country and exits at the sea in Gdansk on the left, where the rainbow ends. I can continue into the not-so-impressive Winter Hall with another fireplace and coat of arms held by lions. If I keep going through the next room, enter a room with before and after photos of World War II damage. At the foot of the destroyed crucifix is a book with a bullet hole in it. The twist of wood is all that's left of the main support for the spiral staircase, which is today reconstructed so that I can enter. Ponder the inspiring ability of a city to be reborn after such a tragic war. Upstairs are some temporary exhibits and several examples of Gdansk-style furniture. These pieces are characterized by 3 big, round feet along the front, lots of ornamentation, and usually a virtually impossible to find lock, sometimes hidden behind a movable decoration. I can also see a coin collection from the days when Gdansk had the elite privilege of minting its own currency. From here, I can enjoy the tower for the view, and then exiting I will go back out on the Dwugi Targ and enjoy this magnificent square. The centerpiece of Dwugi Targ, or Long Square, is one of Gdansk's most important landmarks, the statue of Neptune, god of the sea. He's a fitting symbol for a city that dominates the maritime life of Poland. Behind him is another fine museum, the Artist Court. The Neptune Fountain is a bronze statue of the sea god. It was erected in 1549 and converted to a fountain in 1633 and restored just in 2011-12. During World War II, this symbol of Gdansk was dismantled and hidden with many of the city's other treasures. It was only returned to its rightful place in 1954. The square itself is surrounded by colorful and ornate houses, which look magnificent when the sun is beating off their decorated walls. The square is used to be home to Gdansk's richest, most elite residents, and was used for assemblies. Executions took place on the square in front of Artist Court. The Artist Court is the grand meeting hall for the guilds of the Golden Age of Gdansk and is boasting an over-the-top tiled stove. It is open for visits. I'll find Artist Court, or Dvor Artuza, right behind the Neptune Fountain. In the Middle Ages, Gdansk was home to many brotherhoods and guilds, like businessmen's clubs. For their meetings, the city provided this elaborately decorated hall named for King Arthur, a medieval symbol for prestige and power. Just as in King Arthur's court, this was a place where powerful, important people came together. Such halls were once common in Baltic Europe, but this is the only original one that survives. In the Grand Hall, various cupboards line the walls. Each organization that met here had a place to keep its important documents and office supplies. Suspended from the ceiling are seven giant model ships that depict Baltic vessels, symbolic of the city's connection to the sea. In the far back corner is the museum's highlight, a gigantic stove decorated with 520 colorful tiles featuring the faces of kings, queens, nobles, mayors, and burghers. Half of these people were Protestant and half were Catholic, mixed together in no particular order, a reminder of Gdansk's religious tolerance. Virtually all of these tiles are original, having survived World War II bombs. But not all of the original tiles are here. Three of them were recently discovered by a bargain hunter wandering through a flea market in the southern part of the country, who returned them to their rightful home. Notice the huge paintings on the walls above, with 3D animals emerging from flat frames. Hunting is a popular theme in local artwork. Like minting coins, hunting was a privilege, usually reserved for royalty, but extended in special circumstances to the burghers of special towns, like Gdansk. If I look closely, it's obvious that these paintings are new, digitally generated reproductions of the originals, which were damaged in World War II. The next room, actually in the next building, next door, is a typical front room of the burghers' homes, lining Ulica Druga. Ogle the gorgeously carved wooden staircases. Upstairs, through the door to the right of the stairs, is a hall of knights, once again evoking Arthurian legend. I'll see as I exit St. Mary's Church, just in back of Artist Court. I'll visit this later. As I exit back onto Dwugi Targ, or Long Square, I'll turn to the left and walk down the square toward the next large gate to my left. As I continue down the square, Notice the balconies extending out into the square with access to cellars underneath. These were a common feature on Yulika Dwuga, Inca Dan's golden age, but were removed in the 19th century to make way for a new tram system. I can find more balconies like this on Mariaca Street, which runs parallel to this one. I'll visit that after I reach the embankment. The large, ornate gate directly in front of me is the Green Gate. This huge gate was actually built as a residence for visiting kings, who usually preferred to stay back by Neptune instead, maybe because the river just on the other side of this gate stank. It might not have been good enough for kings and queens, but it's plenty fine for a former president. Lech Walesa's office is upstairs, and I can see the plaque on the gate. Notice that these bricks are much smaller than the ones I've seen earlier on my walk. The others were locally made, but these are Dutch. Boats would come here empty, load up with goods, and take them back to Holland. For ballast, they brought bricks on the trip from Holland, which they left here to be turned into this magnificent gate. Walk through the gate, turn left along the embankment and the Moldova River. Actually, this river is a side channel of the mighty Vistula and was the source of Gdansk's phenomenal golden age wealth. This embankment was jam-packed in its heyday, the 14th and 15th centuries. It was so crowded with boats that you would hardly have been able to see the water. Boats had to pay a time-based tax for tying up to the post. Instead of an actual embankment, which was actually built later, a series of wooden piers connected the boats directly to the gates of the city. Now it's a popular place to stroll and buy amber. Galleons ply the water and are used as restaurants along the embankment. This is also where I want to look for the boat and times for Westerplatte. I'll notice many kiosks, outdoor cafes, and if the weather is as fine as I think it should be, it's a perfect spot to stop for a cold pivo. Try one of the top local beers. A Zwijbeck, Ochem, are supposedly one of the best, and the flagship brand, Tyski. While I sip this brew of the gods, let's learn a little bit more about the history of Gdansk and enjoy this magnificent view. Many visitors are surprised at how un-Polish Gdansk history is. In this cultural melting pot of German, Dutch, and Flemish merchants, with a smattering of Italians and Scots, Poles were only a small part of the picture. Gdansk didn't become exclusively Polish until after World War II. However, in Gdansk, cultural backgrounds traditionally took a backseat to the bottom line. Wealthy Gdansk was always known for its economic pragmatism. No matter who was in charge, merchants here made money. Gdansk is Poland's gateway to the waters of Europe, where its main river, the Vistula, meets the Baltic Sea. The town was first mentioned in the 10th century and was seized in 1308 by the Teutonic Knights, who called it Danzig. I've seen evidence of the Teutonic Knights on other trips. Remember in Riga, in Tallinn, there were always signs of the Teutonic Knights and the leagues, Hanseatic leagues, and the merchants. The Knights encouraged other Germans to come settle on the Baltic coast and gradually turned Gdansk into a wealthy city. In 1361, Gdansk joined the Hanseatic League, a trade federation, mostly Germanic merchant towns, that provided mutual security. By the 15th century, Gdansk was a leading member of this mighty network, which virtually dominated trade in Northern Europe. and also included Torun, Krakow, Lubeck, Hamburg, Bremen, Bruges, Bergen, Tallinn, Novigrad, and nearly 100 other cities, Novgorod. In 1454, the people of Gdansk rose up against the Teutonic Knights, burning down their castle and forcing them out of the city. 3 years later, the Polish king borrowed money from wealthy Gdansk families to hire Czech mercenaries to take the Teutonic Knights' main castle, Malbork. In exchange, Gdansk merchants were granted special privileges, including exclusive export rights. Gdansk now acted as a middleman for all trade passing through the city, but paid only a modest annual tribute to the Polish king. The 16th and 17th centuries were Gdansk's golden age. Now a part of the Polish kingdom, the city had access to enormous hinterland of natural resources to export, yet it maintained a privileged, semi-independent status. Like Amsterdam, Gdansk became a tolerant, progressive, and booming merchant city. Its mostly Germanic and Dutch burghers imported Dutch, Flemish, and Italian architects to give their homes an appropriately Hanseatic flourish. At a time of religious upheaval in the rest of Europe, Gdansk became known for its tolerance, a place that opened its doors to all visitors. Many Mennonites and Scottish religious refugees immigrated here. It was also a haven for great thinkers, including philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer and scientist Daniel Fahrenheit, who invented the mercury thermometer. Gdansk declined, along with the rest of Poland, in the late 18th century and became a part of Prussia, today's northern Germany, during the partitions. But the people of Gdansk, even those of German heritage, had taken pride in their independence and were enthusiastic about being ruled from Berlin. After World War I, in a unique compromise to appease its complex ethnic makeup, Gdansk did not fall under German or Polish control, but once again became an independent city-state. The Free City of Danzig, which is about 400,000 ethnic Germans and only 15,000 Poles. The city, along with the so-called Polish Corridor, connecting it to Polish land, effectively cut off Germany from its northeastern territory. On September 1, 1939, Hitler started World War II when he invaded Gdansk in order to bring it back into the German fold. Nearly 80% of the city was destroyed in the war. After World War II, Gdansk officially became a part of Poland and was painstakingly reconstructed, mostly replicating its German age. In 1970 and again in 1980, the shipyard of Gdansk witnessed strikes and demonstrations that would lead to the fall of European communism. Poland's great anti-communist hero and first post-communist president, Lech Walesa, is Gdansk's most famous resident and still lives here. A city with a recent past that boasts tragic and uplifting, Gdansk celebrated its 1,000th birthday in 1997. After my Pivo, I'll continue along the river. Note on the island across the way, Granary Island. This was where grain was stored until it could be taken away by ships. Before World War II, there were some 400 granaries here. Today, the island is still in ruins. Three granaries have been reconstructed on the next island up and houses exhibits for the Central Maritime Museum. A big international corporation has bought this island and plans to develop the prime real estate into new city center zones of shops, restaurants, houses, and hotels. If I continue along the embankment, I'll see five big round stones on my left. These are the five little ladies, mysterious ancient sculptures. If I look closely, I can make out their features, especially the chubby one on the end. As I come up on the huge red brick fort houses of the Archaeological Museum, I can see another tower I can climb for a good view. The gate in the middle leads to Marjaka Street, a calm, atmospheric drag lined with old balconies, amber shops, and imaginative gargoyles. These are called by the locals pukers when it rains. I'll turn left into this street toward St. Mary's. Along the street is fun to window shop my way up the street and comparison price the amber souvenirs. At the end of the street on the left at number one, the Gottjek House and Hotel has a characteristic little shop in the cellar that sells heavenly gingerbread from the town of Turin. Turin was the hometown of Nicholas Copernicus, and Copernicus's former lover supposedly once lived in this very house. There's a mini museum dedicated to the couple. Just after the gingerbread shop, I'm face to face with St. Mary's Church. Enter St. Mary's along the far side. Gdansk has so many striking red brick churches, it's hard to keep track of them. But St. Mary's is the biggest brick church in the world, accommodating up to 25,000 people. Built over 159 years in the 14th and 15th century, the church is an important symbol of Gdansk. As I entered the church, notice all the white, empty space, unusual in a Catholic country where frilly Baroque churches are the norm. In the Middle Ages, Gdansk tolerance attracted people who were suffering religious persecution. As the Protestant population grew, they needed a place to worship. St. Mary's, like most other Gdansk churches, eventually became Protestant, leaving these churches with the blank walls. Today, you'll find only one Baroque church in central Gdansk, the domed pink and green chapel behind St. Mary's. Most Gothic stone churches are built in the basilica style with a high nave in the middle, shorter aisles on the side, and flying buttresses to support the weight. Think of Notre Dame and its flying buttresses. But that design doesn't work with brick. So, like all Gdansk churches, St. Mary's is a hall church with three naves the same height and no exterior buttresses. Also, like other Gdansk churches, St. Mary's gave refuge to the Polish people after the communist government declared martial law in 1981. When a riot broke out and violence seemed imminent, people would flood into churches for protection. The Zomo riot police wouldn't follow them inside. Most of the church decorations are original. A few days before World War II broke out in Gdansk, locals hid precious items in the countryside. Head up the right nave and find the opulent family marker to the right of the main altar, high on the pillar. Look for the falling baby under the crown. This is Constantine Ferber. As a precocious child, Constantine leaned out his window on Ulaluga to see the king's procession come through town. He slipped and fell, but landed in a salesman's barrel of fish. Constantine grew up to become the mayor of Gdansk. Look on the side of the same pillar for the coat of arms with three pigs' head. This story relates to another member of the illustrious Ferber clan. An enemy army was laying siege to the town and tried to starve them out. A clever Ferber decided to load the cannons with pig's heads to show the enemy that they had plenty of food. It worked and the enemy left. Circling around, I can pass the front of the beautifully carved main altar. Behind it is the biggest stained glass window in Poland. Below the window, behind the main altar, is a huge empty glass case. The case was designed to hold Hans Memling's Final Judgment painting, which used to be on display here, but is currently held in the National Museum. The museum claimed the church wasn't a good environment for such a precious work, so the priest had this display case built, but that still wasn't enough to convince the museum to give it back. But before I head back out and see the mini mingling, I might want to actually venture to the far side of the altar and check out the elaborate astronomical clock, supposedly the biggest wooden clock in the world. Below is a circular calendar showing the saints' days, and above are zodiac signs and the time with only one hand. Check out the smaller replica of the mini mingling that's up by the main door of the church just before I exit. It's in the little chapel on the right. If I've got the energy, I can also climb the 408 steps up the church's 270-foot-tall tower. I'll be rewarded with sweeping views of the entire city. Exiting St. Mary's, I can return to the embankment via the same road, or I can walk left for a block, turn right again, and I'll exit onto the embankment. When I do, turn left toward the huge crane. The crane, or Zurov, is the number one symbol of Gdansk. This monstrous 15th century crane was once used for loading ships, picking up small crafts for repairs, and uprighting masts, beginning a shipbuilding tradition that continued to the days of Lech Walesa. The crane mechanism was operated by several hardworking sailors scrambling around in giant hamster wheels up top. I can still see these wheels up at the top. Along this area, I might also see some kiosks selling smoked fish. However, after my experience in Russia, I think I'll pass. Instead, I can walk back towards St. Mary's, and if there's time, just a few steps in front of St. Mary's on Ulica Pivna Street is the historical zone of the Free City of Gdansk, a museum well worth seeing. It's open until 6 o'clock. In a city so obsessed with its golden age and solidarity history, this charming little collection illuminates a unique but often overlooked chapter in the story of Gdansk. The years between World War I and II, when, in an effort to find a workable compromise in this ethnically mixed city, Gdansk was not part of Germany nor of Poland, but a self-governing, free city. Like a holdover from medieval fiefdoms in modern times, the city-state of Gdansk even issued its own currency and stamps. This modest museum earnestly shows off artifacts from the time, from photos, stamps, maps, flags, tourist leaflets, and other items from the Free City, all marked with Gdansk symbol of two white crosses under a crown on a red shield. 4 out of 5 people living in the Free City identified themselves not as German or Poles, but as Danzigers. This completes my walk of the Royal Way. Spotting the town hall in front of me, walk down to the square, turn to the right, head down Ulica Dwuga toward the guest house, and find another cafe to be able to sit and enjoy another pivo and reflect on the wonderful city of Gdansk.